tosses up Van Hula. Okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it.
It's good.
They got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Welcome to another edition of the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. My name is Leo Stoddard, and I'll be your sports director, your host for this voyage of the Red Zone. I'm joined by my crew of Joey Dwyer, the assistant sports director, and Joe Kennedy, our fine producer. And guys, normally I do a wacky intro with some goofy names for you guys.
Usually, yeah.
But I think tonight there's a bigger picture. There's something bigger than sports. As we reflect, March 11, 2020 was the day the sports world really ended and the pandemic happened. Our lives as we know it really changed on that day, and so much has been different. But really, we are so lucky to be able to gather for 1 hour a week to talk about sports. Because there was a time when we didn't have sports, and now we're able to talk about them every week and have more than we know what to do with.
Yeah, exactly. Those 2 months or so without sports was... it was insane. I remember driving home from the airport. I arrived on the 12th or 13th of March last year. And so when I heard out that March Madness was canceled and everything, I was so mad. I was like mad. But after realizing like how bad this pandemic has been for people and families, it's bigger than sports too. But at that moment, everything getting canceled was really hard.
It just happened so fast.
Yeah.
Because I've told the story on the show before, but I went to the Chicago Blackhawks game that night. And, like, as we were driving to the game, like, new rumblings out of Utah were just starting to happen about Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. But then by the end of the night, like, no professional sports were going on. Our spring break got extended 2 weeks, and the semester ultimately got canned. So it really just showed how fast things can change.
Yeah.
But it shows how far we've come since.
And do you guys want to know the absolute worst?
Everything that was going on, it was just a tough thing, I guess, for, but we got some other things to talk about, though, too, before we get into that with Redbird football.
And definitely, we have a loaded show tonight, so stick around. We got plenty of ISU stuff to cover. We're going to have an interview with Redbird women's basketball point guard Paige Saylor as they get set for their Hoops in the Heartland Conference tournament. And, yeah, let's dive right into it with some of this football talk, guys, because they're off to a weird start with the 0-2 start of the season. It's definitely not the start they wanted after they came off a very good season last year. So as I was driving home to Chicago last weekend, I was listening to some sports talk radio, and I happened to hear our very own coach, Brock Speck, on it. And so it was a short 10-minute interview, but it was interesting hearing him talk because he kind of aired on a little bit more of the candid side, a little more, you know, opinion than we typically hear from him at the press conferences here, where he talked a little bit about what he thought of the 8-game spring season. And he said he's not really a fan of it, that he thinks 8 games is too much, and he's more worried about how that's going to affect guys going into next year. So I just want to know, what do you guys think about the 8-game season in the spring? How do you think that's going to affect the team long-term in terms of getting their bodies ready for next fall?
When I listened to what Brock Speck was saying on the show on The Score, it sounded to me like he wouldn't be nearly as mad about this spring season if he didn't have all of his best players transfer to get ready for the combine.
Yeah, that was like a lot of players. Yeah.
And like, really thinking about it, it was like the Redbirds lost so many good players because they didn't play in the fall, because there are guys who are going to the Senior Bowl or the East-West Bowl or working towards the combine, that it was just I feel like a little disadvantageous, I'd say, for the Redbirds and their football program.
And even the whole injury thing, too, that I do see where he's coming from, because we just saw that defensive lineman Jason Lewan is out for the rest of the season and next year's planned season, he went down in the UNI game.
Yeah, I saw that.
So, like, I think that's something he was a little worried about, because if somebody tears their ACL now, like, you're not done for this season. You're done for next season, and even recovering going into the 2022 season. Yeah. I had to do the math in my head there. Like,
Judah Cora also got hurt. I don't think there's been an update on him yet. But he was able to walk off the field, though, with help in that game, too. And, yeah, you're saying with not being able to compete next year. But there's also some players like Mitch Lewis, a tight end. He's not playing this season, but he's going to be back for the fall season. But these injuries are going to add up over time, especially with the losses they've had already coming into the year.
Kind of brings me to my next question is, so with this being a spring season, kind of an abbreviated season, already at the 0-2 start, if you're Coach Spack, are you focused on winning out the rest of the season, going on a playoff run, or are you making sure you develop your team and get as many maybe younger players in, seeing what you have on your roster and competing, using this season to prepare you for the fall 21 season?
I think what you got to do is really focus on next season, because it has been a bad road for the Redbirds this season. 0-2, that game against South Dakota was in the bag.
Yeah.
Like, the Birds had it.
They had 7 turnovers, yeah.
And they just absolutely blew it. And then the UNI game, the defense did all they could, but UNI is just a better team. And so it's tough for the Birds, because, like I was talking about, they lost so many good players who were going to be back with the team. Obviously, James Robinson and Brady Davis, they were going to be gone anyway. But now when you've got guys like Christian Uphoff leaving and other key members of this team, it really makes it hard for them to compete at a high level in the MVFC.
But their defense has been, like, really good. It seems like they haven't really stepping off as much, even though they've lost all those starters that Coach Speck was talking about. It's really been their offense that returned 3 out of their 5 offensive linemen, and then they've returned some receivers. And Bryce Jefferson, he hasn't looked terrible, but he hasn't looked great, especially in that Northern Iowa game where he just wasn't making the consistent plays.
So that comes down to it. Is it the scheme they're running that maybe they just... I think it's not
offense,
a good scheme
maybe.
That is designed to score points. It's kind of like the Lovie Smith era Bears, where they played really good defense and took turnovers and then just did run an offense where the clock management was kind of their specialty, where they just held onto the ball for a long time and didn't have a flashy offense, but an efficient one.
Yeah.
I feel like that's how more the SPAC offense works.
But in order to do that, your offense has to be efficient.
And
right?
It's not.
And it isn't.
When and they were last year when you had James Robinson, but now you lose that playmaker and you lose the
efficiency. Yeah, he was the best running back in the FCS last year, too. That's the reason why they were winning the games. Like, it really wasn't anyone else on the offensive side of the ball, besides the offensive line, maybe. It wasn't Brady Davis when he was there, Bryce Jefferson. Even though Jefferson did do a good job in the playoffs leading them to the way, it was all James Robinson. And you've seen with the loss of him that they just really haven't been able to get the productivity they've had in that running back position even.
And the Birds really thought that they were covered when it came to running back, because they had they thought that they had the successor for James Robinson. They had a couple different guys, but nobody's
been doing
well. Jeff Proctor transferred away, so that kind of left them in a hole to begin with. Falik Brown has not been performing very well. Nigel White and Kevin Brown both are getting marginal minutes. And like in the UNI game, Bryce Jefferson had almost as many rushing yards as he did passing, and neither of those numbers eclipsed 70. So they're really struggling to get anything going on the offensive side of the ball. And this defense that is very good, like you said, Joe, they can't. It's the same thing as the Lovie Smith era Bears. You cannot expect your defense to be on the field for 40 minutes a game and win.
And they do. And like Northern Iowa and then South Dakota, they got starting positions inside the 50, like almost every other drive in both games. But Leo, going back to your other question about developing the players, they're already 0-2 going against one of the best teams in the country, North Dakota State. And they only play in 8 games, and the playoffs are shortened this year with less teams, about 16. So if you're looking at that, you're not going to have multiple Valley teams. You might have 2 or 3, but ISU is not looking like they're going to be able to get in this year. They'll have to win out to maybe, just maybe, get a chance.
And what a far fall from grace as well. The dominance that the ISU team had last year. I'm sure it's tough for some of these seniors who did stay behind. Drew Himmelman being one, namely, who has been outstanding for the Birds in his tenure here. It's got to be a little gutting to be on this team that was almost the FCS champion last year to a team that can barely put together a halfway consistent offense.
And Drew Himmelman's an interesting prospect, too. He's NFL Combine, and he's going to be playing when the NFL draft's possibly even going on, too. So he'll maybe have a team, and I wonder if he'll step out early, too.
And that's where I get the guys like McKnight and Devin Taylor and Christian Uphoff who left, because you got to think about that NFL future where, like, so the rookie camps and OTAs, like, those are going to be starting as the FCS season is winding down. So it that's where I understand why these guys left.
Boys, sorry to interrupt. Big news from the Chicago Bears. They have signed Kairo Santos to
get out of here. Turn his mic off.
I was trying to check Adam Schefter real quick.
We've been talking
about Kairo Santos, though. He was a bag, but
we were talking about how the Bears might get Russell Wilson. So I thought it'd be fun. Give the show a little energy.
That's enough from Mr. Dwyer here. Okay. Joe, we're just going to do the rest of the show together. But let's pivot here for the second part of this Redbird recap, because the Illinois State baseball team is another team we went a long time from without hearing any kind of info from. And we just heard recently that their series that was supposed to be played at Mizzou got moved to Duffy Bass Field this weekend. Mm-hmm. So they'll be playing three games against the Tigers in Normal this weekend. And this is a team that had some high expectations after making a little run in the NCAA tourney back in 2019. And they lost a good portion of that roster, but they still have the core of that there. And I'm kind of excited to see what they could accomplish.
The baseball team here has really done a really nice job over the past 3 years of being able to turn over talent, because they've had a lot of guys who have gone into the MLB draft. Granted, the MLB draft's like 45 rounds or whatever. But they have a lot of guys who have some staying power, especially in the minor leagues. We're seeing a couple guys getting some big league playing time. But they've done a really nice job of being able to turn over the roster and not really being too hurt by somebody leaving, because they always have a next man up kind of a thing. And I think they're one of the best teams at ISU, maybe aside from volleyball, of having players who are ready to take that next step.
Yeah, like skill-wise, too, especially. And they've had good pitching, too, with Derek Salata, too, last year. What, he had like a 0-0 ERA or something? Like, he went 10 scoreless innings in a one-time, finished with a 0-0 ERA for the Missouri Valley Conference. They got the good pitching this year,
too. And speaking of Salata, look at his picture on the – if you go to GoRedbirds.com, look at the baseball roster.
He's
probably rocking the best mustache in the Valley.
Okay.
Baseball-wise, nothing's better than Coach Spax, obviously. But that you talked about the pitching a little bit. This was – because that was kind of their Achilles in the 2019 run, was that they were really only – two and a half deep at starting pitching, that they had to take Colton Johnson out of the – they used him as almost a long-term closer, moved him to starter that season. But their pitching staff is very young this year, and I think that could help them down the road, is if you have some young starting pitchers that you might be throwing them into these roles before they're ready this year, but in 2-3 years that could really help them, because their lineup is a very veteran team. Like, you got the Butlers, Jack and Joe, you have Gunnar Peterson back, and you have Jordan Lippmann. So the nucleus of this team is ready to contend, but it's just the pitching is where I worry that they could possibly fall off towards the end of the year.
Yeah, and they also did get a transfer, Cameron Maybe. He came from Cal Poly this year because he heard their season was going to be canceled, their conference season for the 2021 season. So he came here to ISU to get on this pitching staff, and so far he's had 5 scoreless innings and 2 appearances. And it's a time for players that breakout years, like Jake McCaw, second year freshman, and a couple other guys. They're positioned to have a good year. Right now they're doing really well offensively, it seems like, but on the pitching side they do need to improve a little. They got that the win against Western Illinois in the 10th inning with a walk-off. Right. That was very exciting to see that. Great pitching in that one too, only giving up the one run. But against Southeast Missouri, they lost 3 out of 4, and sometimes they got to just improve a little bit in the batter's box. That was
and because you look at it, when they're losing, they're not scoring runs. They lost 8-1. They lost, 8-2 to Oklahoma State, a very good team. So, and that's part of it too, is I think that under Coach Steve Holm, they've always had a tough non-conference schedule. And so you played the number 17 team in the country, Oklahoma State, and you lost to them on a walk-off in the first game of that series. So that's huge. So I think playing this tough schedule, even Missouri, an SEC team, you're facing 4 times this weekend. Like, that's a huge series that is going to help them when they face the Valley, because the Valley does run deep baseball as well.
And also, they're going to be traveling to number 9 East Carolina, too, after their Missouri series. And then Southern Illinois at the moment's ranked 25th. And then also, who is it? Dallas Baptist, who's in the Missouri Valley for baseball. They're 21st in the country, who's beaten Missouri already. So it's getting like a full circle type of thing between both teams here.
And I can't wait to get back to Duffy Bass Field. Best view on campus from the press box there. You can really see the whole campus. And unfortunately, we won't have any broadcasts of Redbird Baseball until March 26th, when myself and Joe Kennedy will be on the call there. So yep. I'm very much looking forward to that. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking some hoops, baby. Hoops in the Heartland. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy. We're talking about some Missouri Valley Conference hoops. Hoops in the Heartland, that is.
Oh, yeah.
We got the women's basketball tournament. The Redbirds coming in as a 3 seed, facing Loyola Chicago for the third time in the past 7 days. The Redbirds swept the Ramblers last weekend and are looking to keep the trend going. Tomorrow night at 8 p.m. against Loyola, and you can catch that game here on WZND. We'll be making more history by broadcasting from the basement, we hope, down here as the Redbirds try to get the win all weekend.
The basement
really.
Boys. Yeah, we're the basement boys of Fowl Hall now. Every day, every weekend.
We're always
like.
Down
we're
here.
Always down here.
You thought we had those wellness days? Nope, we were right here.
Yeah, we were right here. But but this Redbird women's team, they got some awards here recently. Juju Redman as All-MVC first team selection, with Mary Crompton being the All-Honorable Mention team as well. And then you had Terrion Moore and Deanna Wilson, both named to the All-Newcomer team, and also Mary Crompton being the Most Improved Player from last year to this year as well.
And if I'm not mistaken, I saw Mary Crompton and Paige Saylor both made all academic team.
Yeah, I was about
both
to say
of them
that,
have
yeah.
been guests on our show, so I think I'm noticing a trend here. We're not just interviewing the best athletes on campus, but we might
smartest.
Be interviewing the brightest as well.
And we've heard it, like Saylor, the surgeon, and then Mary Crompton, kinesiology. I think that's what
hers
it was.
Hers is, she's got some she big, was, long yeah, was, title that is so much smarter than I will ever be. but needless to say, the Birds ball out on the women's team. Men,
we
they have next year.
Already.
They have next year.
Yeah.
But the women's team has really been good all year, and they've only gotten better. And that's especially when you've got like Terrion Moore and Deanna Wilson, who have been stepping up into bigger roles this season. And I think they're hitting their stride at the right time. They're coming into this tournament as a 3 seed, but honestly, I see no way. Like, so if they beat Loyola Chicago here on Friday night, they go play Drake Saturday afternoon. I see no way that Drake beats the Birds. I think their only competition is going to be Missouri State in this tournament.
Yeah, and because when they played Drake here, it was 3 weeks ago, I believe, and they swept them that weekend. The first time they had done that since 2014, first time they beat them since 2014, first sweep since 12. And they just looked...
Both games, they looked great,
so much better, too.
Like, the
gap was so... Like, they didn't just look better in terms of talent, but you could tell how well coached they were. And I think that speaks so much to Coach Gillespie, who's in year four. Now you can see that yeah, she brought in the skill, and these players can play with such intensity, but just the way they're always in the right position out there. You never catch them making sloppy mistakes. They just kind of beat these teams by playing such smart basketball.
And I think it kind of started with the first game against Missouri State, where they kind of got blown out 69-52 in that one. And then Leo and I, we did the next game.
And they haven't lost.
They could have won. Yeah, they haven't lost since the second game against Missouri State, who's still ranked and was ranked at that time. And they've just picked up their game since that loss. It was a heartbreaking loss, too. ISU was up with like 10 seconds left, and they hit a little floater to advance and win the game, Missouri State did. But everyone's coming together in form, and Coach Gillespie's done a great job. And I think there was a message said after that Missouri State game, and I think it's gotten to the whole team right now, especially with Juju Redman getting that first team selection, and Mary Crompton, one of the best 3-point shooters in the country. They've been really able to get in a good stride here,
and
in the right time.
And Leo mentioned it. This is Coach Gillespie's fourth year now in the program, and you can really see that these are now all of her recruits, and this is her team that she has kind of handpicked and selected to be this competitive. And it is so exciting, because last year they were very good, and they kind of got robbed. And we talked to Mary Crompton about it, how they kind of got robbed of their chance of making some noise at the Missouri Valley Conference tournament. So now this year they are coming in with a vendetta, and I'm so excited to watch these games.
They took advantage, too, of like when they were at 8-6, I think, at a point where they lost Missouri State. They were right in the middle of the valley, but then they took advantage of their schedule and just have won 6-plus games in a row now going in that tournament.
Yeah, and it's just what makes me feel so comfortable is how deep they are, too. Like, it's not just their starters that are getting the job done. Like, when they can throw Maya Wong and Deanna Wilson in off the bench, like, mm-hmm. two players that could probably be starters at other schools in the Valley, it just speaks to the multitude of riches this team has.
And Paige Taylor does talk a little bit about Maya Wong and some other players on this team that are on the bench that have stepped up, as we have that come up in just a little bit, too, with Paige talking about them.
Yeah, it really does say something, just that, you know, you could see that, you know, last year that they had a lot of the top-end talent, but this is where Coach Nell, being in her fourth year, really speaks, is now that depth has filled out, because if you're going to beat a team like Missouri State, you have to be almost eight players deep, because they are such a top-heavy team to keep up with them that you just need to be able... That's how they were able to hang in that game, was mm-hmm. that they had a lot of different players chip in on the score sheet.
And looking at it, they have nine players who have played over 19 games, and then every single player on the roster has played in 13 games at least. So you're taking a look at 14 people who have gotten... about nine, at least 13 games in this season. So they've used every person. Even if you take a look at Ellie Gitzel, she comes in certain games where she has a great defensive performance, or even just puts up a couple points, but still has that effort on the court that's needed.
We saw in the second Drake game, when Juju Redmond left with an injury, that Cale Newland, like a player that rarely sees action, came in and hit two clutch threes. Like, they just have that next player up mentality, and they are just, I feel very confident about them going into hoops.
Yeah, and I'm just going to echo everything you said, because we basically covered it. This is probably the most exciting team at ISU right now, and I'm beyond excited that we get to call these games. Hopefully, if they make the final for Hoops in the Heartland, we'll get to go to the Quad Cities, so that'll be awesome.
Your hometown?
My hometown. I'll take you boys out. We'll get some good food. But should we send it to Paige Saylor? Hear what she had to say about it?
Let's quit teasing it and just play. Let's hear it from Paige Saylor.
All right, here she is.
Redbird women's basketball guard Paige Saylor. The women's basketball team's getting set for their Hoops in the Heartland tournament. They'll be playing on Friday against Loyola Chicago. So, Paige, let's just start by asking, how excited are you to be able to play in the conference tournament again this year?
Yeah, I'm so excited. You know, last year got cut short, so we kind of missed out on it. And I'm super pumped.
And so you're going to be taking on Loyola here coming up. What's it going to be like playing Loyola for the third time in a row? And what adjustments are you going to have to make?
You know, I think it's going to be tough because, you know, it's not easy to beat a team two times in a row, but it's even more difficult to beat them three in a row. But it's also kind of nice because they're fresh in our minds. You know, the scout is fresh. What we want to do is fresh. And yeah, you know, we're just kind of making some adjustments on the defensive and offensive end, just because we did play them so recently. We want something to throw some new things at them.
And since it's last year's conference tournament was canceled, or how does the experience of having been there and played before help you compared to some of the other players on your team?
I think the biggest thing is, especially our freshmen don't know what it's like. Well, I guess this year a little bit, but don't know what it can be like to play back to back to back, you know, and just having that experience and actually playing on the court, like it's a neutral court. So that's kind of tough as well. Just like knowing those little things, what it's like to play there and how much it's going to take to play back to back to back and get to where you want. I think those are the biggest things.
And how is playing like back to back days? How does that affect your body, and especially going forward towards the end and trying to make it to Sunday?
It's definitely tough, but obviously this year helps because we've been doing it every weekend. But you know, the second game is honestly, well, for regular season, is honestly all adrenaline. You know, you want to win. You want to, in terms of the conference tournament, you want to get to the championship game. So that's all you really need. You want to win for your teammates and for your coaches. And, yeah, you just do it for them, honestly. That's kind of what the second and third game, that's like the motivation you have. It helps you get through it no matter how your body's feeling.
And you're Coach Gillespie's first four-year player. How has your relationship with her grown over the course of your 4 years here?
So much, honestly. She's just a great person and a great coach. And, you know, our relationship grows every year. Freshman year, it was more of a coach-player relationship. But I would say as the years go by, it's more of person-to-person. It's more personal as you learn the system and get to know her. So I would say that's the biggest thing that's changed.
And the program has changed a lot, too, over the past 4 years. How has it changed for the better since you've been here, you think?
That's a tough one, honestly. I think the biggest thing is we've just gotten, I guess, more like all-around players, more skilled players. But also, the team just wants to win for each other. It's very unselfish. And each year I've been here, we've just gotten more close, which definitely helps us on the court.
And so after reading your bio on the athletics page, it says that you wanted to be a surgeon. Is that why you're so good defensively with your hands? And that's why you're a two-time defensive selection?
I don't know. I don't know if I would say that, but possibly.
But how important is it to you, though, being so great defensively?
Well, defense has always kind of been my passion and my motivation. No matter how I'm doing offensively, I really focus on defense just because I feel like that's the way I can impact the games the most. So, yeah, it's super important. It's always been my number one priority.
And so for the next part of the interview, we're going to call this the Pick a Teammate segment. We're just going to say something, and you're going to say the teammate that best fits this category. So the first question we have is okay. The most underrated player on the team.
Oh, gosh. The most underrated player? Oh, these are so hard. Okay. I would say Maya Wong.
So how was it with Maya, too, also being here during her, I guess, senior year of high school almost? How was that having her there with you guys last year?
It was awesome. I mean, I think sitting out a year can really help you learn the system in a different way than just coming in as a freshman and having to play. Like the pressure is kind of off, I guess, a little bit. You get to learn the system and learn what the coaches want. And, you know, by your second year, which is technically your freshman year, you're kind of, you know, the system. And it's a little bit easier, I would say. But it's been awesome having Maya.
And then for another thing, for picking on the teammate, who has the strangest pregame routine you would think that you've been watching, or maybe it's even you, or who do you think it is?
Honestly, we kind of all have the same pregame routine. If I'm being honest, we always go to Starbucks and then just go back to the locker room and hang out. So I don't think anybody really has a weird one that they do.
Okay. What do you get at Starbucks usually?
In my order?
Yeah.
A strawberry acai refresher.
Ooh, okay.
That's so good.
And who plays the best music on the team? And on the other side of that, who plays the worst music on the team?
I would say Juju plays the best music. And probably Kate plays the worst. Yeah.
Who's the teammate you'd want to be stuck on a deserted island with?
Allie. Okay. <Diesel. laughs> We definitely would die, but I would want to be stuck there with her.
But you'd have a fun time on the island.
Yes.
Okay. And we thank Paige Saylor for joining us as the guest on this week's show. You could catch the basketball game versus Loyola tomorrow on WZND at 8 o'clock. Some of us will be here on the call. I'm not sure who yet, but somebody will be here.
I'm jealous of you boys, because I couldn't make the interview this week. So I would say it was fun to listen to. You guys are good. I'm so proud of you boys.
We got to know that maybe on that desert island they weren't getting through it, but hey, we're in
We know who on the basketball team not to give the aux to.
Exactly. That's the big thing, because you know we do work at a radio station, Fused Radio. Yeah. So we're playing everything for you.
Pulse.
And we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Gavin Broderick, and we're going to be talking about some NBA hoops, more hoops even. So you're listening to 103.3 WZND Fused Radio, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Illinois State men's basketball point guard Parrish Lee, and you're listening to 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
You're listening to the Red Zone. I'm Leo Stotter with Joey Dwyer and Joe Kennedy. And we're keeping things on the hardwood because now we're joined by our newsroom guest, Gavin Broderick, who is voluntarily a Detroit Pistons fan. So let's talk about that first, Gavin. The first question is why?
Well, see, I grew up in the Detroit area, so I'm a Detroit fan through and through. Right. And before I go off on the Pistons for a long time, get really angry with them, I just wanted to say, I am a Detroit Pistons fan, believe it or not. I love watching them, and one of the great things about them sucking is that they are actually good sportsmen. That's why I like watching them.
All right. So
okay, so that's why they didn't shake the Bulls' hands, and what was that, the 91 loss?
Well, okay.
That's a long time ago. Listen, I don't know if we're talking about that right
I'm
now.
Not gonna, I am not going to accept any bad boy slander. We are a pro bad boy Pistons podcast / radio show. Isaiah Thomas, the OG, Joe Dumars,
Bill Laimbeer, yeah.
Oh my God, Rick Mahorn. Young Dennis Rodman, Vinny the Microwave Johnson. I could go on for days.
I'll be complimentary to Gavin here. I appreciate his loyalty here because he does.
They got good history.
He has a unique team and he sticks to it, so I appreciate that. So, Gavin, tell us a little bit about what it is that's going on with the Pistons current day. Joey talked about the Bad Boys, but what is up with the 2021 Detroit Pistons?
The 2021 Pistons are, how should I put this? Amateurs? That's how I'd put it.
Yeah.
We look like a college team when we're playing against the Knicks.
And they're not good.
Yeah, we look like make the Redbirds look like absolute units, and that's not even disrespect to the Redbirds.
So
it's the NBA.
So can you talk a little bit about Jeremy Grant though? He's having a really great year, record high year in points, rebounds, assists. So. Talk about how his presence and maybe how him playing could help the development of maybe Sadiq Bey and also Hayes, too, as well, Killian Hayes.
See, there are two players I actually like on the Pistons, and those are Jeremy Grant, who is an absolute legend. God bless him.
Yep.
And Sadiq Bey, who is criminally underrated.
Yeah,
love
he
that
is.
Man. Love him. These players are the only – they're like these little toothpicks holding up the entire team, and they're breaking – and this, the time is running out for the Pistons, and we need more players. We need, like I said with the Lions last time I was on, we just need a full reset. We need everyone out. I want everyone fired. I'm sorry.
So then I'm assuming you were all about the moves that the Pistons made earlier this season, where they dished Derrick Rose and then released Blake Griffin as well.
Yes, I am. I'm into that. I give her all these old players. Yeah. I want everyone out. I want an actual college team for the Pistons.
So it seems like the Pistons too. They've been in this point where they've been like an 8-10 seed. Haven't really gotten a great draft pick, and with their late draft picks, they haven't really gotten much from those good scouting. But with Sadiq Bey, I think he's going to be a very good player in the NBA. I think he's going to have potential for all-NBA defensive team, and even offensively, he could possibly develop into an all-star. Right now, he's still very young, and he was an absolute dog out of Villanova, too. He was definitely one of my favorite players coming out of the draft. And any other younger guy, or what's your take on Killian Hayes, too, the point guard from France?
See, I think he might need another year or two for me to get a good opinion on him. But for now, I think he's just okay. Like, right now on the team, obviously looks much better than everyone else. But if, let's say, he were to move to another team, even like a middling team, he would still be like the bottom of their roster instead of, whereas on the Pistons, he's at the top just because everyone sucks.
So do you think that Pistons or Detroit upper management are kicking themselves with the seventh pick in the 2020 NBA draft? They got Killian Hayes and passed up on my favorite rookie this year, Tyrese Halliburton. Good old Iowa State boy. Oof. He is a premier shooter in this league already, and his efficiency is only going up by the day. And this is just my little segment where I like to throw love on Tyrese Halliburton. But do you think the Pistons, exec, are kicking themselves for drafting Killian Hayes, who is maybe a less NBA-ready prospect?
See, the thing is with the draft and the Pistons is we have infamously bad luck in the lottery. We should have a top four pick next year, but in the past, when we should have gotten these higher round picks, we always get bad luck, and we always get, you know, top 10, top 20 picks instead of the top four that we should be getting. It's always just so disappointing, and it's you're right, we do pick bad players as well. But it also has to do with our terrible luck. Detroit is cursed.
And they got a good chance, too, though, this year with the upcoming draft. They could get, like, a Cade Cunningham, Jalen Suggs, and Evan Mobley. They got – and I think pretty sure this year they changed the draft lottery, too, as well in the NBA, where they'll have higher odds of retaining the top three picks or something like that, or it's in a play right now where they're trying to pass that.
Because I was going to say that does bring up a good point with the NBA lottery. Like, if you're a team that is as bad as like the Pistons have been, like, you could almost be doomed because you're at mercy of a tough lottery where the worst teams don't always get rewarded for sometimes, you know, a better part of a decade. So it is a painful existence that the Pistons are going through. And I mean, we've seen it with the Bulls too. They're just starting to get out of that, and hopefully. It's taken a lot of hopefully. So I don't envy the position you're in, Gavin. It's a tough spot, but hopefully things get better here. But we're at the midseason point of the NBA season. So maybe outside of the Pistons, who have been some teams that have impressed you also in the Eastern Conference, aside from Detroit?
Wow.
Or
well,
not Detroit.
My
not Detroit.
Favorite team to watch who is currently whooping the Pistons' ass as we speak is the Hornets. They're actually, I think they're a fun team to watch. They're in the middle. They still have a negative record, but... Mm-hmm. But
they got LaMelo Ball. They got a lot of promising development.
That's Joey's guy.
But right now in the East, I don't think it's going to be possible to stop the Brooklyn Nets right now. And especially, you know, Blake Griffin, he's not great, but it's a piece that the Nets are going to get better from, I think. It's a guy who brings a veteran presence who can do it, but the pick and roll game with Kyrie, James, and KD, he's a good addition to that team,
and
no matter how bad he's gotten.
I haven't heard anybody talk about the storyline of Blake Griffin and DeAndre reuniting, DeAndre Jordan.
Oh, jeez.
But I mean, their verticals are both definitely down probably like a foot.
Maybe they just need, like, it's the magic of them being together.
Yeah.
But
you know?
I feel like that could really help Blake Griffin is just by being a depth player now, like, because that's what he is at this point in his career. So there's not much pressure on him. He could just kind of go out there and do his thing, and nobody's expecting him to be the guy. So I do think that's a really good fit that he's not a first option anymore, but maybe as a fourth or fifth, he could really excel in that role.
And if you're taking a look at just the standings in general, from fourth place down to 11th place, teams are separated by literally three games. So there's a huge span for teams that can even possibly bump in. Heck, even the Pistons could make a run here in the second half of the season and make it to a 10th or 11th seed, because I think it goes 8 through 10, it is, or 8 through 11 that teams are really playing in for a buy-in game, or it's 7 through 10, something like that. So there's an expanded playoffs where the first round bye is a chance, so it gives an opportunity for these young teams with the young players, such as with LaMelo Ball, and then even the Cleveland Cavaliers have a chance with their two dominant guards to get experience in the playoffs with those young guys.
So what do you guys think of that expanded playoff format with the play-in games? Is that not creating the best competition, or is that rewarding bad teams? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's good, personally, because I think the best team will get it in, and whoever wants to fight for that 8 seed or for that 7 seed will do that, and then they'll put even up a bigger fight than they would in the real playoffs too, as well.
I want to know what the Pistons fan thinks, because, you know, as a Pacers fan, I've enjoyed some luxury of some playoff series over the years. So I want to know what it feels like to have that opportunity when your team is not as good.
Well, I'm kind of conflicted on it. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think the Pistons will ever have that opportunity, to be honest.
Yeah.
Not in my college career, at the very least. But
they haven't won a playoff game since 2008, so it's been, they got swept by the Cavs when LeBron was there, and then they got swept by Giannis too 2 years ago, and that was a Blake Griffin team that was kind of doing it all for him. So they've been in that moment, or they've been in that part of their franchise right now where they don't know where they're really going, and the Bulls were kind of in that before, like a couple years ago and even last year, but it seems like they're getting out of it. So it just takes time, and as a fan, for you, it's hard.
These aren't the fun years, but eventually it's going to get to the point where you have hope, and that's where we're at with the Bulls. You know, just think about, from a morale change, how things have changed in the last calendar year, where they cleaned house, got rid of Garpax, got rid of Boylan, and brought in a new energetic front office. Like, it's the same players we saw last year, but all of a sudden there's a different shine on them because there's new management, and we actually kind of trust this process more. So sometimes that's all it takes for a team like the Pistons. I don't know if they have the pieces necessarily right now, but if a fresh set of eyes come in, that could really help things.
All right, so Gavin, if you are the general manager of the Pistons right now, what are you doing at the end of the season? Because you said you think they need to clean house. What are your moves? If you're in charge of this team, what are you doing?
See, I might get a lot of flack for this from the other three Pistons fans out there, but I think we need to get rid of our coach, Dwayne Casey. I'm sure he'd be fine on another team, but I want a fresh face. I want
young
some
coach.
Yes, I want like a 30-year-old coach, somebody who has
Dan Mueller.
Sure,
Jim Boylan.
I want someone who is young, who can emphasize with these people and think about new things. We have a young team, so we don't have to teach anyone an old dog new tricks. We can do things that other teams can't do, and we just aren't doing that right now.
And with the chance to get a good draft pick, because like this year's draft, it's really good. There's a lot of talent from about 1 to 7, or even 1 through 10. You can get talent from anywhere. It's one of the deepest drafts I feel like we've seen, with Cade Cunningham, Jalen Suggs, Jonathan Kuminga, Evan Mobley, and Scotty Barnes. So that those are from like 1 to 5, 1 to 6. If the Pistons can fall through there, I think they can get an all-star caliber player. And with that new coach possibly, and new assistants, and new front office maybe even, they could start to see a change, kind of like how the Bulls did this year, went in a new direction.
And we'll see where that direction could be. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to be sticking on the hardwood, because we're going to be talking some March Madness, some Selection Sunday preview. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to The Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZMT.
You guys heard the theme music. That was Joe and Joey. We're getting set to.
Hey, we could. We for copyright reasons, we couldn't.
We
could
have real one.
So we Joe and I did our best acapella rendition.
Oh. So please, nobody sue us. We're talking some March Madness action. You're listening to The Red Zone. Leo Sauter, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, Gavin Broderick is still here. We're not letting him leave.
Never.
So he's forced to talk some hoops with us. So we're getting set. Sunday Selection Sunday.
Ooh.
This is one of the best times of the year. Like, I almost love the pre-tournament buzz, but more than the actual tournament, just like getting so excited, over-analyzing my bracket picks, figuring out what teams I like, what teams I don't like, thinking my dark horse team that's going to lose in the first round, but I think it can go all the way. Like, that's the most fun part of March Madness. It's madness, baby.
It's just good vibes, too, and especially with spring break, I feel like throughout high school and everything, with how spring break and line up with March Madness, even having these 2 days off for wellness days, watching the conference tournaments and having the warm weather and listening to that CBS intro, there's nothing better.
Remember back in the day where, like, you could actually, when, like, we'd be an in-person class in high school, and, like, that first day of the tournament, and it was just madness, because like
everyone's
at least in my school, like
phone.
The teachers would be like, they had a software monitoring or
you could watch what people are doing.
So like they'd block like ESPN, CBS, all that stuff, so you couldn't see. So it was all like hearsay. Like you're like, oh, McGilligan said Iowa's winning, or you know, Colossus
Middle Tennessee
said
beat Michigan
like
State.
Middle Tennessee State. So you're just going off word of mouth, and like rumors would spread like wildfire all over the school. And that was so fun. Like I almost missed that. Now that I can like put 4 TVs in my living room and watch all the games, it loses a little bit. But I love the energy of March Madness. So let's dive right into this, guys.
Yep.
I think maybe the first thing we should talk about is who are some Cinderella stories we should be watching for, because there are some with local ties that we got.
Okay, so I don't think either of the ones with local ties are going to do very much.
Ooh.
Especially not Drake. Drake is one of the first 4 to play in. Don't know if they're going to get past Boise State, and if they do get past Boise State, no way they get past Oregon. The other one is Loyola Chicago, and of course, this is all I'm going off of Andy Katz's bracket prediction because we don't actually know what the brackets are. We don't actually know what the brackets are going to look like. But Loyola Chicago's got a matchup against San Diego State, which now thinking about it, I also don't think they're going to win because San Diego State's really good. But a Cinderella team that I love coming out is sorry, boys. Had a little something in my throat. I love the idea of Colgate.
Okay.
And because they're a 14 seed.
Why?
And it always seems like there's a 14 seed that beats a 3 seed.
I think it's Winthrop, if anyone.
Winthrop. I picked them in a 3-of-3 round more than once, and they did me well.
I just love the idea of Colgate. I don't know very much about them, but I always feel like there's a 14 seed that goes far. And I was looking through the 14 seeds, and I recognized, like, in this prediction, I recognized them, and I was like, okay, well, all these teams are bad. I know the least about Colgate. So that's what I'm riding with for my Cinderella, because it really seems like this year is going to be very top heavy without a whole lot of room for lower seeds to kind of break through the mold a little bit.
I think so too, and with Winthrop, I think
Right now they're projected a 12 seed or a 13th seed, and you always see a 12 beat a 5. And right now they're 23-1, only got one loss in the year, lost by 2 points, and they're playing very well. They got a couple of players that made their all-conference team selection. But, Joey, you're talking about Loyola Chicago, and this team statistically is better than their Final Four team. They got the best defense in the entire nation, first in scoring defense, first in adjusted defense efficiency, fourth in defensive rebounding rate, and they just get in your grill when they're shooting. They limit second chances on the glass, and they do both without fouling, and they're fourth nationally in two-point field goal percentage. And it's a team that has depth, and this is a team that has eight players averaging over 5 points per game. So it kind of falls off, it seems like, after Cameron Crutwig, the Missouri Valley Player of the Year, but they have so many players that can shoot and so many players that can defend a lot better than certain teams.
But here's my thing, Joe, and I'm about to do you a little dirty, so I apologize. But even if, according to Andy Katz's bracket prediction, even if Loyola Chicago beats San Diego State, they go right over and play Gonzaga. And I know you don't bet against the Zags.
But March.
I know, but Joe, I know you don't bet.
A matchup game, and you don't even know what these matchups are going to be yet.
But,
so
Joe, I know.
We don't know the matchups at all. Those are just predictions that aren't right at all. Yeah. So we're not talking about predictions against other teams in the second round yet. We're just talking about an overall feeling, and this feeling of this Loyola Chicago team is going to be, that's a tough thing though. When they made the final, were they 11th or were they at 8-9? I think they were at 11th, which I think is easier because then you'll get to play the second seeded team in the second round, but instead of as an 8-9 seed, you have to play the first seed team in the round of 32.
That is tougher. And let's look at the other Valley team that's in contention is Drake. They were a hot team at the start of the season where they were flirting with being ranked. What, they went 19-0 to start the year or whatever before they lost to Valpo, which kind of came as a shock. But maybe Gavin, you could tell us a little bit about here. What do you guys think of Valpo's chances of potentially making the tournament? Did losing an Arch Madness do them in? Or Drake's chances. No, Valpo, nobody cares about them. Drake might have a chance. What do you guys think?
You know, just overall, I wish you guys could see my face right now because I'm disgusted with you, Joey. I'm going to be honest. You have disappointed me.
Talking
so
about
much.
Loyola Chicago?
Porter Moser, yes. Naperville guy, used to coach here at ISU too. So
they
got
a
lot of
Rice player on the roster.
Guys,
another Naperville North player.
I need
player.
You guys to know, like, when Loyola went on that Final Four run, that was absolutely electric.
Right.
Like, I'm not taking anything away from that. I just think, like I said before, and Gavin, I'm trying to telepathically get this through to you, sitting over there in the newsroom, is that I just think this is such a top-heavy year this year
that the
best teams are far and away the best teams this year, and I just think that for a 9 seed to make a run even to the Sweet 16 is going to be really difficult.
And so looking at Drake, though, it's a team that lost their best player out for the year, Roman Penn. And then now that Shaquan Hemphill, he was their leading scorer, too, and rebounder, too, as well. He will be back for the tournament. And it's been a long week for Drake because they played on Sunday, and they're waiting. They're on the bubble right now. But with Duke was being out, and they're on the bubble, too, as well. And a couple other teams right now, like Utah State, Boise State, Colorado State, so basically the Mountain West, Drake's going to have their eyes on them. But at the moment, I didn't think so on Sunday that they'd be able to get in. But right now, I think Drake's got it.
I really think that Duke thing helps them because that's just one less team in the fold, and it's one less blue blood team. Now, if you look at a lot of those teams that are on the outside looking in, they're not like the premier teams. So even that aspect gets lost. Like, you know, they're all kind of similar, smaller market, mid-major teams. So that
Syracuse lost today, too. So okay. I think they're also going to be outside looking in, too,
right,
for Drake.
Wow.
So Drake's in a better spot with Syracuse and Duke being out.
So we've been talking about it, about how stacked that this tournament's going to be at the top end. And I want to know who you boys think is going to be in the Final Four. Obviously, we don't know exactly what each division or location or whatever is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
But just four teams that you really think are going to be very highly competitive this year.
So I got Illinois.
Of course,
because and they're just firing on all cylinders right now, too.
Joe is
a good. I am an Illinois fan.
Joe's literally sitting here in an Illinois windbreaker.
Yeah. But I got my ISU gear under. But Illinois, Gonzaga, Arkansas, and then either Michigan or West Virginia.
All right. I'm going to stick with you on Illinois. I really like them. I think they're playing their best basketball as of late. I like Kansas for some reason, maybe because they're on in our studio right now.
Yeah, they're up 9 right now.
I like Kansas.
Oklahoma.
I think Baylor is very overpowering. I like them. I feel bad I'm picking like 2-1 seeds here. And then for whatever reason, I like Texas Tech. They've always been kind of my guy. I think it was because my freshman year roommate had like a second cousin that played there, so we always watched all their games.
Yeah.
So I still kind of watch them when they're on now. And I think I like them. I think they could be one of those teams that could get sneaky if they get
in the Big 12. Anyone, I feel like, in the Big 12 could make the Final Four, including Baylor and like a couple others.
Yeah. Gavin, I want to hear what you think.
Okay, so I only have three. My fourth spot is anyone but Ohio State because I hate them.
And that's fair.
Are you a go blue guy?
I am a go blue guy, but even if I was a Michigan State fan, I would still hate Ohio State. Okay. That's very what's fascinating fair. About us Michiganders.
So you're a big Michigan guy. Do you have Michigan in your Final Four?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay.
Who do you think I am?
Checks out. Okay, so who are the other two?
I'm with Leo. I got Baylor and Illinois.
Okay.
Yeah. Jeez, those are going to be 3-1 seeds.
I think this year is a chance
boring.
For the first time since 2008.
I was trying not to be boring.
I think all one seeds have the best chance in the past 10 years to make it to the final.
Here's what I'm going
to
say. I have not been impressed by Baylor at all this season. I just think...
Why?
I hate saying that because the looks on your guys' faces right now broke my heart. They absolutely broke my heart.
Granted,
but I watched as Baylor almost lost to Iowa State this year. And so there have just been games where they have not played up to their potential. And I'm concerned that they're not going to be able to.
That was after literally like a 3-week COVID layoff, though. That was their first game back.
On the other side of that, Joey, look at how they played against Illinois. Like, they looked so much better than Illinois. Granted, that was early in the season, but still, that talent differential was so noticeable, and they were just so overpowering against Illinois, a team that could be a one seed. So I think when they played some of the best teams in the country, they've risen to the occasion.
And they were supposed to play Gonzaga too, and they were trying to schedule that after both teams or Gonzaga got COVID. They were trying to do it sometime in even February, but we never got to it. So
that's unfortunate.
For both teams, that would have been big because outside of Baylor in the conference, they only really played Illinois in the non-conference schedule. And then when you look at the conference schedule, they pretty much dominated besides their one loss to Kansas, where they kind of did get dismantled in that one. But that was also their second game back from COVID.
And this is the worst thing about Gonzaga playing in the WCC is they're always undefeated, and I have no idea how they are, because all their non-conference come early in the season when everybody's figuring stuff out. So I have no idea. Gonzaga is going to be a one seed. It's going to happen, and then either they're going to win the championship or they're going to get bounced in the Elite Eight, and I'm going to pick the wrong option of those two, and I'm going to be mad when my bracket's busted. And that sucks, and this is something I'm passionate about. I'm glad we have the space to where I can air this right now, but Gonzaga is too good to be playing in such a bad conference. It is so annoying.
Go to the Pac-12.
Go to the Pac-12. Thank you. Please, for the love of God. I just want to know how good you are before I put money on it.
In their favor, though, their non-conference schedule this year was like insanely tough. West Virginia, Kansas, Baylor. They didn't play later, though. Auburn, and then Iowa, too. They demolished Iowa by 21 points.
I don't want to hear about that.
Yeah, but Iowa learned from that game, and then Gonzaga. But yeah, once they get to that conference schedule, it kind of goes downhill. The team that, though, did give them their hardest game was West Virginia, where West Virginia only lost by 5 points in that one, where Derek Culver and Deuce McBride, one of my favorite guys, and Sean McNeil, they can shoot the ball better than anybody anybody in the league.
West Virginia is another team to watch for in this tournament, because I feel like they have kind of that it factor that you could really need in the tournament, where you kind of just have those guys that can hit those clutch shots. And so we're looking at, there's the Big 12 and the Big 10. I feel like you could almost make the case for any school from that conference to go on a run there. Like, either of those conferences, really. Like, I think we're going to see more of that, where these bigger conferences are going to have more representation than maybe they'd have in a normal year. And it just speaks to the depth of these conferences, and it shows, because they had to play each other all regular season, I think that puts them in a better position come tournament time.
And we haven't even talked about Oklahoma State, who's been on a complete roll.
I was just about
right
to
now.
Say Oklahoma.
Without Joe,
Kate,
I literally have
too. Oklahoma State pulled up on my computer right now.
I've been
right
watching
now.
The games, and when they beat West Virginia before that Saturday Illinois game, I was watching another that one. They were doing that all without the best player or one of the best players in the country, definitely the number one pick. I think it's been solidified now with Cade Cunningham.
And Cade Cunningham came back today. They played West Virginia again in the Big 12 tournament today. Yeah. They barely squeaked by. I was watching that game, eating lunch today, and that was a really, really good game. And Cade Cunningham really came out, and he had missed some time, came out, put up 17-7-4, and was a really big difference for the Cowboys. So
I'm so excited.
They're going to be a fun team to watch. Both of these teams. West Virginia is also so exciting. And if you can't tell by the tone of my voice, we have not had...
And especially with last year's being canceled, it seems like it's been forever ago, especially as an Illinois fan. Last year we were supposed to be in the tournament first time forever. And it's just so nice. It's actually happening. It's about to start on Sunday, and life couldn't be better right now. It's springtime, too. Let's go, boys.
Yeah, and it's a great time to be a sports fan here because we have March Madness starting soon. We got some hoops in the Heartland, too. So it's going to be a jam-packed weekend on WZND.
Yeah.
So the plan right now, we're going to have 8 p.m. tomorrow night, Redbirds versus Loyola. If they win on that on Friday, they're going to be playing on Saturday. Win Saturday, they'll be playing Sunday. Sunday, we're going to have some volleyball, too, yeah, versus Evans or Missouri State. And Monday, volleyball versus Missouri State, too. So
fingers crossed on those volleyballs.
Yes, that's too.
There's just a lot of sports going on.
There's a lot of sports going on. We're excited.
It
was a great show tonight. We'd like to thank Paige Saylor from the women's basketball team for coming on the show, talking. It was a busy week for her. She fit in a little time for us, so we're appreciative of that. Gavin, we'd like you to thank you for coming on and sharing some of your pain with us. It made us feel a lot better. And, you know, it was just a great show. We talked about some Redbird football, Redbird basketball. It was great to be back here in the studio.
It flies by, too.
And I can't wait until next week. We're going to be able to talk some March Madness. Maybe get, like, a watch party going for the first day of games going on.
I'm all about it. Come down here. We got some TVs. Let's get it best.
So, for Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, Gavin Broderick, and Paige Sayo, I'm Leo Stodher. Thanks for listening to The Red Zone on WZND.
For past episodes of The Red Zone, again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And, of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND.
The Pulse of Redbird Nation.